This is a production of the White Dragon Podcast Network, WDPN, bringing you the very best in internet talk radio.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, Dave Swan with another edition of Silver Screen Spoilers, live from the screen room, and I'm joined by my co-host this week, Mr. Kevin J. Kessler.
What's going on, Dave? Just two of us this week. It's like a tag team.
That's right.
We're like the Rockers of movie podcasts.
The Rockers. I like that comparison.
Yeah, I was trying to pick one that I was going to say Demolition, but I didn't think you'd like that very much.
No, and don't say Demolition around Chiller Theater, because otherwise every legal team will come cracking down on you.
We actually discussed this on Bad Squad Radio as well, about how it's insane, and I want to see if that's going to happen with other cons as well.
I guess we should give people feedback about how Chiller Theater, a local horror sci-fi geek convention, is advertising former WWE World Wrestling Entertainment talent on their convention, and it seems that WWE has taken offense to that, because all of a sudden they stopped being allowed to use all their former WWE talent names.
Yeah, and you know, normally they've always kind of been cool with letting the old timers use their copyrighted names, because you know they're mostly broken down old horses that need to make their money. But it seems like ever since CM Punk got the CM Punk name pulled from Talking Dead, that this happened like the same week that all of a sudden CM Punk's name was changed to Phil Brooks on the Talking Dead.
Right.
So I'm wondering if that has something to do with it.
I might, and I feel like it's probably something directly at Chiller Theater, you know, maybe directly related to Chiller Theater as opposed to
maybe they pissed
them
off.
Talent themselves.
Yeah, maybe they pissed them off.
Because I can't see Caitlyn, Demolition, and
Godfather
all being guilty of the same sin.
No, definitely not. But it might be more of like something they're going to be doing going forward. And you know, one of the big things about Chiller is it's more than just horror now. It is all movies, and that's how we're tying it into the show here, that we're talking about it, because you know, Chiller has a lot of different movies that are previewed, a lot of movie stars that are there. You know, this year it's going on in April. I don't think I'm going to go, but
no, I haven't gone in a couple of years. I used to go a lot.
Yeah, we all used to go.
Yeah, before it started sucking.
Yeah.
But, man, I wish Brian Brass was here this week so he could give you his opinion on Chiller Theater.
He hates it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because he's a horror movie guy.
Yeah.
And now you got Joyce DeWitt and Bob from Sesame Street at the horror movie convention.
Yeah, and also just the people that run it are, you know, not very people-friendly people.
Like you can't get a media...
No, exactly.
For it at all, and yeah,
you know, I can get a media pass for New York Comic Con,
but not for Chiller Theater.
My credentials don't match up for Chiller Theater.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, enough talking about Chiller Theater and giving them free publicity. We are here to talk about movies, and specifically, we are here to talk about the top 10 movies of this past weekend.
Yes, very
the weekend
interesting.
Of March 14th through the 16th, and these are some. Interesting top 10, I gotta say. It's kind of all over the scope. And as always, warning, because there will be spoilers for pretty much the gamut. Some of these shows we've reviewed and talked about on the past on the show. If that's the case, you know, we'll kind of make a plug and let you know that you can find it on a previous episode and
right.
then move on the list. Maybe touch on it if there's some new information.
Definitely.
But, yeah, I think we're gonna just jump right in on
starting at 10 and working our way to 1?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Start at the bottom, work our way up top. Number 10 is the greatest independent film of all time in some circles, the Veronica Mars movie. The first major motion picture ever fully financed by
crowdsourced financing, yeah.
Yeah.
This was very interesting because, you know, they, in order to make this film, I think what they needed to raise $2 million.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
It was something like that.
I think it was $2 million, because I remember I read a thing with... what's her name? Kristen Bell recently. And she said, so they wanted to raise $2 million within the scope of a couple days.
They did it by lunch.
Yeah. They did it in like an afternoon. Like I think it went up at like, or was it morning that it went up?
Mm-hmm.
It went up in the morning and by noon they had it.
Yeah.
Amazing, amazing response. And it makes me wonder, like, you know, could you crowdsource like a Buffy the Vampire Slayer movie with the original cast from the TV show? Like, could you do it with, you know, other things like Heroes or things that had that cult following.
Yeah, I mean, I guess as long as the rights, as long as you have access to the rights.
Yeah, like, listen, if they were like, hey, we need to make not that this would cost $2 million, it would be a lot more, but they were like, $2 million, we can make a Smallville movie continuation, I'd be like, here's some money.
Yeah, I would too. I'd that was immediately because Veronica Mars was a CW show,
yep,
if I'm right. So immediately, you know, Smallville came into the discussion.
Buffy as well.
Yeah, Buffy as well. But again, like especially in the case of Smallville, you need to have the Superman rights, which belongs to Warner Brothers. So that's a little bit more complicated than getting the Veronica Mars rights.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you know, I think the best thing for Veronica Mars fans, which I'm not one, so I don't even know what the show's about. But yeah, but I think it's got to be really cool to go to this movie because then you're like, we did this. Like, I'm a part of this.
That's right. And
I hope that in the credits of that movie, they list every single person that donated to it.
Yeah, I believe that they do.
Good.
Yeah.
I mean, there's got to be a lot of them. But
yeah. I mean, Kevin Smith started that trend years ago with Clerks 2. He put all of his MySpace friends in the credits of Clerks 2.
Really?
Yes. If you go back to Clerks 2, all of his MySpace friends, he lists them all.
Very interesting. Like, thousand of them or whatever?
Oh, it goes...
Thousands?
Yeah. I mean, you have to watch it on like your DVD or Blu-ray and go frame by frame by frame to even hope, because it has to go by at such a lightning speed.
Yeah, I'm sure.
In order to get, you know, probably hundreds of thousands of names to go through there real quick.
Yeah, but that's probably what they probably did with Veronica Mars as well.
Interesting note on that, too, is it opened to a somewhat limited release, although it was a major motion.
200-something theaters, right?
Yeah, it was in the AMC over by me.
Okay.
I went to I midnighted Need for Speed, which we'll get to later on this week. But there was a pretty big turnout for Veronica Mars fans.
And for it to be in the top 10, I mean, what did it make?
It made $2 million.
So it made back its money.
Yeah, it made back its money, which it made back. I was going to say, this is what's interesting about it is, I never saw a commercial for it. I don't know if a commercial exists.
I never saw a trailer either.
Yeah, I did see a trailer for it.
Theatrically?
Yeah, I saw it in theaters attached to something, but I've never seen a TV spot or anything. So they didn't spend any money on it because, well, they made all their money for it with the crowd.
Right.
Crowdsource funding.
That's true. So it's all.
So anything, this $2 million that it's made in theaters already, whatever it goes on to make, that whatever it makes, you know, on DVD, Blu-ray, rentals, and on demand, you know, that's all gravy.
Yeah, it's all in the black.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I mean, and you know, it's funny that you brought up Kevin Smith with his MySpace friends, because Kevin Smith he wanted to do this with Clerks 3. He wanted Clerks 3 to be 100% crowdsource financed, and then, for lack of a better term, he pussied out.
He did, and, well, you know, the excuse he gave, whether or not he pussied out, or whether or not, what he said was he realized that he could get the funding himself easily.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? And I say that just for the sake of being comedic. I do love Kevin Smith. We all do.
Yeah. And which is interesting. And he said, you know, if he could get the funding easily, leave the money on the table for somebody else to get.
Right, right. And you know, he's really a guy that seems to care about the industry itself and like what's best for the industry.
Yeah.
Because, and then here's my thing. Here's my thing about crowdsource financing. Crowdsource financing. And while I think this is a wonderful thing, what they did with Veronica Mars, I believe that crowdsource financing is made for the up and coming filmmakers, mm-hmm. the guys that don't get big studio money, the guys that don't have, you know, the backings of big name producers. It's for these guys that are trying to make their indie films and get their name out there. And when big Hollywood comes knocking on the door, crowdsource financing, that's less money people have to give to other projects that actually need the money.
Right. I mean, I don't discredit Veronica Mars because that movie wasn't going to get made.
I agree.
Like, no studio was going to, you know, go out there and be like, oh, we're going to make it the Veronica Mars movie.
Right. But if Kevin Smith had done Clerks 3 on there, I feel like that would have been like what I'm talking about.
Oh,
that would have been just like doing it to say you did it.
Right.
Because,
and like you say, he didn't. And, you know, there's other Kevin Smith movies like Tusk or like the Rapture movie that he's talking about.
Kaiju Jesus.
Yeah, Kaiju Jesus. Where those are movies that, you know, he might not get studio funding for.
Right.
You know, so, you know, maybe that's something that, you know, if Kevin Smith fans want to see it, you know, you go out to do it. the cast of another podcast, Tell Them Steve Dave, talking about Kevin Smith. They've recently brought in over $100,000 to finance a stop-motion animated Christmas movie that they're doing.
Oh, neat.
They set the goal at $25,000 and brought in $100,000.
Wow.
Yeah. And all $100,000, they said, is going into the production of it. Because there was a big controversy. People were like, oh,
what are you
going to
do with $75,000 extra?
Yeah, you're just going to pocket the $75,000. They're like, no, you know, we're just going to put it all into the budget.
We're going to make one badass stop-motion animation film.
Yeah, so they're, you know, stuff like that. Like, nobody's going to give the Tell 'em Steve Dave guys, even if they are friends with Kevin Smith, you know, money to make a stop-motion Christmas movie.
Right.
It's not going to happen. Let alone what will probably be an R-rated stop-motion Christmas movie.
Yeah, I'm sure it will.
And, you know, that's the cool stuff about, you know, the crowdfunding stuff. You know, let's artists make stuff specifically for their fans.
You've used crowdsource financing in the past, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've dabbled in it, you know, to...
People probably not realize Dave directed two independent films, wrote and direct two independent films, Only Go There at Night and Only Go There at Night, Darkness Rising. Did you do crowdsource for that?
The latter of the two.
For yeah, Darkness Rising?
Darkness Rising, we did some, yeah.
Which, by the way, I was in Darkness Rising. You should check it out. It's very good.
Yeah, I mean, it's available, you know, online. You could go on IMDb, look it up.
Yep. It's got me my IMDb page.
That's right. So when you wonder who this guy is that's talking about movies, I know a little something about what I'm talking about.
Right, right. But now also, with your professional wrestling fed, UWA Elite, you've done some crowdsource financing before as well, right?
Right, yes. Yeah, we've done crowdsource funding with that as well.
It's really a wonderful tool, especially if you really know how to use it and you use it to its fullest potential.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's so many people out there that don't know how to use it.
Yeah.
And,
you know, who actually did a really good job with it? Amy Jo Johnson, the Pink Kimberly, the Pink Ranger from the original Power Rangers. She did it to make this film. It was like some doctor film.
Okay.
I follow her on Facebook. So she was on there every single day and she was using her Power Rangers fame to help with it, because she was like, if you donated a certain amount, like you get a phone call from her, another certain amount, and this was the one that really caught my eye because it would have been such a cool keepsake to have. She would actually give you one of her original Power Rangers scripts that has has her notes in the margins and, like, you know, her blocking notes and things like that.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah, that was like $500 or something like that. But I think they made their money off that, and, you know, this was a small indie film from somebody that was famous 25 years ago.
Yeah.
That, you know, you were never going to really see again.
Yeah.
Or 20 years ago, right? At this point?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's the 20. It's the, yeah.
I didn't know if it was 20 or
25. It's the third, you know, 20th anniversary celebration. They've managed to milk this for 3 years now.
But, yes.
Yeah, and I mean, you know...
she did a really good job with it, though.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I mean, if the per... You, basically, if you need to... If you have a somewhat level of celebrity, it helps a lot,
yes,
obviously.
Absolutely.
But if your perks are really good, that helps a lot.
Right.
Also, with the Tell 'em Steve Dave people, I'm just using them as an example because it's the freshest in my head, because I know this just ended.
You get a phone call from Ming?
Yeah, no, they but like a lot of it was like if you donate like as little as $20. I think 20 was like the smallest you could donate. But you basically just pre-bought your copy of the DVD.
Right.
So all it was pre-ordering your DVD. But if you went up to like the $500 mark, you voiced one of the characters in it.
Oh, neat.
I think at like the $100, there was like a couple $100, you got one of the stop motion claymation characters when they were done using them for production. So they gave away very cool.
That is really neat.
Really cool gifts. And that's what, you know.
Stuff people actually want.
Yeah. Or, you know, if you're in the case with Veronica Mars making the movie, if you're a Veronica Mars diehard fan, which there's a lot of people of, the movie itself is really what you want, because
right,
you want to see the continuation.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know how Veronica Mars ended, but if it ended anyway, like a lot of CW shows end, you're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Like, Angel literally ends. Did I ever tell you about the ending of Angel? It ends with... basically, they do. There's like the senior partners are like the big evil arch demons, and they have this this group that does their bidding on Earth called the Circle of the Black Thorn. And there's 13 members, and they eliminate all 13 members of the Circle of Black Thorn at the same time to piss the senior partners off. Mm-hmm. And then the gates of hell open up, and these hell armies and dragons and stuff come out and invade Los Angeles. And then Angel just goes, the armies are coming down the aisle. One character goes, "All right, I'll take the 50,000 on the left." And then Angel just goes, let's go to work. And he swings his sword and it ends.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Could you imagine having invested all these years, like 5 seasons of Angel plus 3 seasons of Buffy that preceded it? Yeah. Like, you've invested 8 years and that's how it ends.
Yeah. I mean, I will say this.
They continued it in comic book form. Yeah. But, you know.
At least with CW shows, you get a final episode.
Yeah.
Last night, my parents just discovered, after investing 7 seasons in a show called Army Wives on Lifetime Network, that they didn't even get a final episode. That the show
That's not had, a reality show?
No, it's not a reality show. It's a drama.
I thought it was a reality show.
But, yeah, it just ended. It got canceled at the conclusion of the 7th season and ended on a cliffhanger without any resolution.
And, you know, and this is not just because we're huge geeks, but I think one of the greatest final episodes of a TV show ever was Smallville.
Right.
Gave you everything you want except for actually seeing him in the suit.
Right. Well, I mean, which you can, you know, yeah.
Yeah. They CG him and show him from afar.
Which, you know, we don't know what he looked like in the suit. Maybe it was for the best.
Yeah, he probably looked pretty... Honestly, Tom Welling's a big dude, but it's hard to make that suit work, and he probably looked really scrawny in it. Mm-hmm. I mean, Brandon Routh is a huge dude, and he looked scrawny in it.
Right. All right, moving on to number 9.
Number 9.
Which also brought in $2 million this weekend. Disney's Frozen.
Amazing that this is coming out on Blu-ray, what, this week or next week?
This week.
By the time this comes out, it might even be out already. And it's still in the top 10 highest grossing films. It's amazing to me.
Yeah, it is. It's all-time gross now is at $1,026,556,000. It is the number 15th highest grossing film of all time.
Crap, it didn't get the top 10, huh?
Not yet. It just surpassed Alice in Wonderland. Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland.
Thank God.
And it is less than $1 million away from The Phantom Menace.
Okay.
That's right, folks. Only Star Wars film to break $1 billion is Star Wars The Phantom Menace. But
suck on that, fanboys.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's...
Misa in the Billionaires Club! Yay!
So, it's safe to say Frozen will, at the very least, you know, settle... You know, it'll beat Phantom Menace, because it's less than $1 million.
Are any other classic Disney animated films higher than that? Like Beauty and the Beast, or Little Mermaid, or any of those?
Well, let's keep talking, and I'll look that up while we're...
Okay, well, you know, talking. Just to further... I was actually saying this a day before the show... they are actually, and this is kind of some Walt Disney World news, but they're moving Anna and Elsa from the, they're currently in Walt Disney World, you could find Anna and Elsa, the two princesses from Frozen, over in the Norway Pavilion, where for the character meet and greet spot. It has become so popular that they are actually moving them from Epcot to the Magic Kingdom, which is the flagship park at Walt Disney World. And because their lines in the Norway Pavilion have reached over 4 to 5 hours... Could you imagine 4 to 5 hours waiting to take a picture with a character?
I can't imagine. I
wouldn't even do that for a ride.
No, neither would I.
4 to 5 hours, they said that the lines have been reaching for them, and they're moving them to the Storybook Princess area to be with the rest of the Disney princesses, which is just going to make that now a complete and utter nightmare wreck.
Right. Just bringing up the numbers here, Frozen is at, you know... $1,026,000,000. Number 14 is Phantom Menace with $1,027,000,000. And then right after that is Jurassic Park with $29 million. $1,029,000,000. So I think it's very realistic that it's going to jump those two.
Yeah, probably.
Then there's a big jump that I don't know if it's going to make with the DVD release coming up so close.
Oh, the DVD release is included in these numbers?
No, the DVD is not. That's why I'm saying I think it's going to hit a grinding wall. Stop soon. Number 12 is Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides. That is $1,045,000,000.
Okay,
so
but
that's a pretty substantial.
Were there any classic Disney animation in there?
I'll just run them down real quick. From there on, it's Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides, Toy Story 3, Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest, Dark Knight Rises, Skyfall, Return of the King, Transformers Dark of the Moon, Iron Man 3, Deathly Hallows Part 2, Avengers, Titanic, Avatar.
So the answer to my question is no.
Nope.
Because I don't count Toy Story as a,
no.
That's a Pixar film.
The so, highest grossing classic Disney animation movie, it looks like, and it was just literally just shy of $1 billion, is The Lion King.
Really?
With $987 million.
So Frozen has now officially become the number one Disney animation film of all time.
Not counting Toy Story?
Not counting, that's a Pixar.
Okay.
It's yes, it's the same company, but, you know.
Oh, no, I mean,
like, classic Disney princess animation, that kind of stuff.
Right, yeah.
So that's
Frozen,
pretty incredible.
Frozen wasn't Pixar?
No, Frozen is Disney Studios.
Okay.
Disney Animation Studios.
Then, yeah, Frozen is the highest grossing Disney animated film of all time.
Yeah, the only Disney princess movie that Pixar made was Brave.
Okay. That's...
Yeah.
That's impressive.
It's extremely impressive, especially when you consider it's beaten out Beauty and the Beast, it's beaten out Little Mermaid.
Yeah,
you know, these films that people live and die by. You know, when I first heard a review of Frozen before I saw it, because I didn't see it right away, somebody said it was the best Disney animated film since Beauty and the Beast, and I was like, I don't know about that. And then I watched it, and I agreed. Yep, best since Beauty, because Beauty and the Beast was like the pinnacle of, like, this is your feel good Disney film, and.
I mean, yeah. We could agree to disagree on that.
What would you say? Lion King?
Lion King's my favorite. I actually prefer Aladdin over Beauty
and
the Beast. Oh,
Aladdin's my favorite. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But I think Beauty and the Beast is the best.
Okay.
Like, from a quality standpoint, I find Beauty and the Beast to be the best round. But my favorite is Aladdin.
Mm-hmm. Just throwing it out there.
Because I'm a boy.
Yes. Besides, it looks like Lion King and Frozen are the only two Disney non-Pixar movies in the top 100.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. So, well, you know, back the classic Disney renaissance was early...
5 cents movie tickets.
Yeah, it was early 90s.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was talking the first one.
No, I was talking about the revival. Yeah, well, yeah, those were like 5 cents up for a film back in like the, you know, back in the pre-war days, you know. But the revival, which is like your Beauty and the Beast, Little Mermaid, Aladdin, Lion King, that was early 90s, where it was, you know, much less for a ticket. I'm sure if you took that took inflation into account, they would probably be in there.
And Lion King is Lion King the only one of those that got a 3D re-release?
No.
Okay.
There was a 3D re-release of Beauty and the Beast. There was a 3D.
Oh, Little Mermaid had one.
Yep. Did it? I can't imagine that would have been out and I didn't go see it. Because my wife is like crazy for Little Mermaid.
Maybe it didn't. Because I know Little Mermaid just recently got the Blu-ray re-release. Normally it goes in that order.
Yeah.
Normally it gets the 3D theatrical and then the Blu-ray.
I would love to see Aladdin get a 3D re-release.
I think it'll just be a matter of time.
Yeah, because Aladdin was one of the first ones that really played with computer graphics. Mm-hmm. So I'd really like to see, you know, that kind of come to life.
I'd love to see Aladdin get George Lucas a little bit. And I know that's...
Like change things?
I'd like to see them... I would love to see them just put out Aladdin, where they fix some of the CGI.
Uh-huh.
Some of the CGI that, you know, was groundbreaking at the time, yeah, but it's a little less groundbreaking now.
It was very early CGI, yeah.
And I would love to see Robin Williams and the animation team update some of the pop culture jokes, just for the modern... Kid.
I don't think you'll ever see that happen.
I don't. Yeah, I mean, I don't think it'll happen.
You know,
but
you're not going to get the genie talking about Justin Bieber. You know, like.
But how amazing would that be?
That would be
especially
funny.
Current Justin Bieber.
It'd be funny, but you know, at the end of the day, then you have to update Aladdin every 10, 15 years.
Then Aladdin would be in the top 10 highest grossing films of all time.
This is true. I would like to see them redub Robin Williams into Return of Jafar, but there's all kinds of legal things with that.
Yeah. Now. I still haven't seen Frozen.
Okay.
I'm going to get around to it as soon as it comes out on DVD at this point.
Yeah. It's great.
But I want to talk to you about the controversy that's going on right now.
Yeah. I've heard about this, and for the life of me, I don't understand it.
All right. So for those people that aren't, that there are some members of the Catholic Church that are attacking Frozen.
Deflecting.
Yeah.
We'll get into that.
Because they feel that it's brainwashing young children to be homosexuals and that it's promoting bestiality. Now, I can't, you know, you know, I can't endorse or deny it because I haven't seen the movie.
I have.
So I'm going to
I've seen the
throw
movie.
It to you.
This is utterly ridiculous. I don't understand. First of all, the only relationships in this entire thing are male-female relationships. And the only one that has any kind of relationships is Anna. Anna, she meets up with one guy in the beginning who she, classic Disney princess love at first sights, until you realize that she doesn't actually love this guy, or, you know, I'm not going to, even though this is silver screen spoilers, I'm not going to spoil what happens with that.
Okay.
But then you have her with the other, you know, there's another love interest as well, who is also a man. So I don't understand, like, the only way I can think that they're possibly doing this is that maybe they're considering, Let It Go. The lyrics could be construed that way as being like somebody become like coming out or something like that. That's the only thing I can, because it is like a coming out song, but it's coming out about having superpowers. It's not hiding your superpower from the world.
But
anymore.
In no way,
no.
In no way plays that in the
no.
film.
No, it wasn't until like I really sat down and thought about like, well, what could people possibly be thinking? Because the best part is when people make these arguments, they don't cite anything.
Yeah, nobody at any point has cited any examples whatsoever. They're just making these claims via press releases and
bestiality. I mean, there's a reindeer in the movie. Don't get me wrong, but nobody's trying to bang it. Like, there's a song called "Reindeers Are Better Than People," but. Not like reindeers are better in bed.
Yeah.
Like, I really don't understand where it's coming from. Because even the lovable sidekick in this is a snowman.
Right.
Not even an animal. So you can't even make that argument.
And we had talked about this when this kind of came out. If you want to attack Disney for bestiality, there's no shortage of other places to go.
Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, Beauty and the Beast is obvious. You could go after, you know, Princess and the Frog, you know, there's...
You know, those are humans that are in animal form, but I get you.
Yeah, well, I mean, it sounds like it's a lot less of a stretch than whatever they're going after here.
Because that's the thing. Here's the thing about... And this is the thing. I'm going to violate a WDPN rule here about not talking about your religious... I'm a Catholic. I was married in a Catholic church. I was baptized Catholic. I was confirmed Catholic. Calm the frick down, Catholic Church. All right? Calm down. Because you got a cool pope for the first time ever.
Yeah.
Like, this pope who is just kind of like, maybe our attention needs to be put elsewhere. And it's bringing the Catholic Church back into people's good graces. Because I will tell you, it almost was embarrassing to tell people you were Catholic with the level of intolerance and just flat out, like prejudice displayed by the organization. Now they have a pope who is like, let's focus on the teachings of the Bible, and let's focus more on this. Let's focus on more about like giving to the poor and yada yada yada. And that's kind of helping their image. This is not. Religious fanatics coming out and being like, Disney is bestiality. They need to stop.
Yeah, and also let's point out that these are a few vocal minorities.
Yes.
This isn't like
coming out of the Vatican.
No, this is a vocal minority, and again, they're people talking to hear themselves talk.
Right.
Because they're not citing any examples.
Of course,
they've latched onto a kids movie that has been extremely popular for the last 5 months at this point.
And not for nothing, if I'm a Catholic, if I'm like someone in a Catholic church talking out, the last thing I want to do is draw people's attention to sex scandals.
Yeah.
Because that's the inevitable conversation will come up about priests touching little boys. So...
Yeah.
You know, I think it's ridiculous. I mean, these are the same people that decried Harry Potter, for Christ's sake. I mean, you know, talking about how it was paganism and this, that, and the other thing. And if it is, so what? So what? It's a thing. Just because it doesn't match up with your own beliefs doesn't mean, you know... I don't know. It just really, really, really ticks me off.
Okay. Any other closing thoughts on... We've touched on it a couple times in the past at this point.
Go, folks... Folks, ignore the vocal minority. There's nothing wrong with this movie. It's a delightful movie. That's why it's made so much money. Go out, buy it, support it, because it's awesome. And by the way, just to end on a lighter note, or not a lighter note, a more positive note, do you think this is going to break a Cardinal Disney rule and get a theatrical sequel?
I think it could. I think that
no Disney classic Disney movie from Disney Animation Studios has ever gotten a theatrical sequel. I mean, listen, they get direct to DVD sequels all the time, and they're terrible. Yeah. But and that dates all the way back to Walt. Mm-hmm. Walt hated the idea of sequels. Walt Disney, I'm talking about here, folks. When I say Walt, there's only one Walt. When they did the Three Little Pigs, somebody was like, "Oh, well, are we ever going to see the Three Little Pigs Part 2?" And his famous quote that I always quote about sequels that aren't necessary is he looked at them and said, "You don't follow pigs with pigs. You do something else." He said, "You don't follow pigs with pigs. You do something new. You do something different. You take the attention that you're getting from this one film and be like, here's an entirely different film. Look what else we can do." He never wanted his studio to be a one-trick pony. He didn't want to be putting out Snow White 2, 3, and 4. You know, that's why a Disney story is a complete circle. It's a beginning, a middle, and an end. There's no room for anywhere to go from there.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, Toy Story was the first.
Well, it's Pixar.
But it was like the first animated Disney movie, Disney Pixar movie to get a sequel.
Right, Cars being the other one.
And it did well. Cars got a sequel and it did not do well.
Right, Cars is more the merchandise. They needed an excuse to put out more Cars merchandise. Yeah. Gangbusters.
And, you know, financially, it did okay, but critically, it was panned terribly. I mean, there was a lot of people that liked it, so it's hard to say.
And I can't really comment on it. I've never seen Cars or Cars 2. Mm-hmm. Not for lack of trying. It's just really never, like, I'm not willing to spend money on it, and it's just never kind of on any of the streaming networks. But, if there was ever a movie that needed a sequel from Pixar, it was The Incredibles.
Right.
And that didn't get a sequel.
No. To answer your question, I think Brave gets a sequel before Frozen.
Okay, I could see that.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know if they're... I mean, it would make sense to give it a sequel. Mm-hmm. I mean, does it make sense? Does it lend itself to a sequel?
No, not really.
Okay, I mean, if
you wanted to go with a sequel, you could, mm-hmm. I guess. I mean, there was no real, like, big bad villain in this. But it's like, what, everything gets frozen again? I mean, you know.
Yeah.
It's really just, it's a complete story. It's a classic Disney fairy tale. That's it. Leave it alone. Move on.
Okay. All right. Moving on the list. Number 8. The newest film from Wes Anderson, The Grand Budapest Hotel. Brought in $3 million this week.
Okay.
I did not see it. Not much to say about it. Other than just citing the numbers here. Thus far in America, it has brought in just a hair under $5 million. However, overseas, it's brought in $20 million, which is huge.
Wow.
Yeah, which is huge for an independent film.
Yeah, it's an indie film. Wow.
Yeah, haven't seen it.
Is it a foreign film, or was it made here domestically?
No, it's Wes Anderson, who makes a whole bunch of weird crap. But he manages to have one hell of a cast once again. He has Ralph Fiennes, Adrian Brody, William Dafoe, Jeff Goldblum, Jude Law, Bill Murray, Edward Norton.
Wow.
Harvey Keitel, Owen Wilson. I mean, it's a...
Well, you know, it's like Avatar. You know, you never know what's going to click with the foreign markets. And, well, Avatar did great domestically. The bulk of its money came from worldwide.
Right, yeah.
You know, there were people in Europe and Asia that were literally killing themselves because they couldn't go live in Pandora.
Yeah.
Which is like, Pandora sucks, dude. You don't want to live there. Like,
no.
I wouldn't want to live there. Everything's trying to kill you. They even say it in the beginning of the movie. Like, everything that eats and sleeps on this planet will try to kill you. That's just, you know, my point about, you know, the foreign market is very, very different. And you know, things that do really well here might not do so well there, and vice versa.
So, I mean, we're going to move on to that real quick because neither one of us have seen it, so there's not a whole lot to talk about with it. Number 7, Tis the Season, Son of God, adding another $5 million to its repertoire, bringing its grand total to just about $51 million domestically.
For a re-release of something that was already on TV.
Yep. $51 million domestically, and it has no international release.
We gotta make a movie about Jesus.
There's no, yeah, it hasn't been released anywhere other than America. Holy. Probably due to some type of rights because it's a television show. We touched on this a couple weeks ago. For those of you that aren't aware, Son of God is the theatrical version of the television miniseries, The Bible. They basically took all of the scenes of Jesus. They took his story out of the miniseries, spliced it together, and made a movie that has made $50 million. Box Office Mojo does not list the production budget because...
There was no production budget.
There was no production budget. So, I mean, we were talking about...
The production budget is paying the guy that sat in the studio to cut up episodes of the Bible and piece them together. That's the production budget.
So, I mean, we were talking about Veronica Mars making $2 million of gravy.
Yeah.
And, you know, Son of God's up to $50 million of gravy.
Jeez.
I mean, look, I was like, I can't believe that this is, you know, happening, that people are falling for it. But, hey, people are falling for it. People are going for it. But hey, I mean, it's the only time of the year that this movie works, right around Easter time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because even at Christmas, people don't want to see this type of movie.
No, they want to see Santa Claus.
Right.
What does Jesus have to do with Christmas? No.
But I'm saying they don't want to see a depressing Jesus story at Christmas time.
Right. They want to, you know, Easter is really the time for that to come out.
Right. Like I said, we've talked about that in legs in the past, but I mean that's a hell of a haul. $50 million.
Yeah, I'll say.
For you know,
for something that costs nothing to make.
Right. Number six, it brought with $7 million this weekend is the Juggernaut, the Lego movie.
Love it, love it, still love it. We talked about it on show one?
Yep.
Or two, was it?
Show two, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you want to hear talk about Lego movie, go listen to show
two. At great length.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything is awesome for the Lego movie.
Well, that is... What has it brought in?
All right, well, the Lego movie cost $60 million to make.
Okay, that's a big budget.
Yeah, $60 million to make. At press time, its worldwide gross is $378 million.
Hachi mama, wow.
Yeah, and we know that a sequel is in, you know, is in the works. Seemed like there was a long time or the announced release date, I think, was 3 years, 4 years from now.
Well, that's the kind of movie that I think takes a long time to make.
Yeah. But yeah, we've talked about there's not much to talk about other than the fact that it's...
And by the way, that's what sequels used to be like. They used to be 3-4 years. Now we're turning them out, you know, quicker than that.
Right.
Thanks to after what Iron Man 2 did.
Right. So...
2 years. What? John Favreau's head exploded.
Number five.
Midway point.
$8 million. Tyler Perry's Single Moms Club.
Okay.
Now, in the first episode, if you listen, I said that I wasn't going to review movies that I was not the target demo for, or at least not something that I would... Because I'll see a lot of movies that I'm not necessarily in the target demo for. But I'm not in the target demo for anything Tyler Perry presents, nor do I want to see anything that Tyler Perry makes.
Right.
This is the first week that this is out, and yeah, I mean, I'm sure that it's going to do just as well as every other Tyler Perry movie. It'll hit its glass ceiling in, you know, a week or two, and
hey, that guy. It's got a lot of money.
Yeah, you know,
Hurlier is what I say to him.
I don't like his movies at all.
You're not supposed to.
But
South Park hit it on the head so perfectly when Tyler Perry shows up at the school and he's doing his stuff and all the white people are just looking at him like, what? And Token is just laughing and throwing money at him.
Yeah.
It's made for African Americans.
Right. What I was saying, I don't like or enjoy his stuff, but I have nothing against him. I think that he's a genius.
Oh, yeah.
He's figured out a formula.
He figured it out and it works.
He cracked the code. You know, I was thinking about randomly the other day. Do you remember a couple of years ago that a really strong internet rumor broke?
That he was going to buy American Airlines and name it African American Airlines? Yeah.
I was just thinking about that,
too, when we talked about this story.
And it kind of makes me sad that that didn't happen.
Yeah, yeah, I would have loved it. I would have totally flown on it. I just to see what it's like.
I can tell you what it's like.
Soul Plane?
Tyler Perry movie.
Yeah.
And they're all on demand.
Yeah, I'm sure they all would be.
All the stories is dressed up like Madea.
Oh, my God. I would totally go on that plane.
I'm going to stop before I go too far on this. But number four, still carrying on, doing pretty well with $10 million this week, is Liam Neeson's Nonstop.
Good for you, Liam Neeson. You saw this film, right?
Yes, I did.
I did not.
Okay. First of all, just go over the numbers. Cost $50 million to make. It is made $88 million so far.
Wow. Good for Liam Neeson.
I
like him a lot. I'm a big fan of him as an actor. I like that he's willing to do the Clone Wars occasionally, and or was willing to do the Clone Wars occasionally when it was on.
Tune in next week. We're going to talk about Clone Wars.
Yeah, definitely. I enjoy him as an actor, so I like seeing him succeed. He also doesn't seem like a guy who is like arrogant and pompous.
Liam Neeson, star of the movie, Julianne Moore, co-star. Pleasant surprise of the movie is this year's Academy Award winner, Lupita Nyong'o from
12 Years a Slave
is in this movie and not advertised at all.
Interesting.
Yeah. I gotta say, this was a movie that I definitely felt like could have gone either way, because it is a movie that does, from start to finish, takes place entirely in the confines of the airplane.
That's neat.
Even when they talk to people on radios or on the phone or
anything, in the airplane,
they never show the other end of the conversations. You stay in the airplane for the entire thing. And it was, it's an interesting thriller. It kept me guessing for the entire thing. And I'm not going to spoil the ending of it, because
there's... It was good?
Yeah. I mean, I would recommend it. Hmm. I would definitely recommend it. It gets a little political at the end, out of the blue. Okay.
Is it leaning more left or right?
It's hard, because it's a villain motivation.
Okay.
So, I mean, they carved it, like, it's one of those things where they needed to give the villain the motivation. At it. The story is, if you're unfamiliar, is that Liam Neeson plays an air marshal on the plane, and he receives a text message saying that they're going to kill a passenger every 20 minutes until he receives X amount of money.
Okay.
I forget how much it is. It's an obscene large amount of money. I want to say it's like $20 million or something along those lines.
He just happens to be on this plane where it's going to happen?
Yeah. And he's the air marshal on duty. And
does every plane have an air marshal on it?
No.
Oh, okay. No.
And he's...
Does Melissa McCarthy sit next to him and hit on him?
No. It would be a very different movie. Julianne Moore sits next to him and hits on him.
Oh, okay. Well, that is very different.
Yes. But yeah, and like I said, it definitely keeps you guessing for the entire time. You know who is, you know who is behind everything,
right.
And it does have a payoff that makes sense with it. They don't just reach for something and pull it out.
Okay.
It's one of those movies that I do want to see for a second time. Just once you see the reveal, then you want to see it a second time. When you know what the reveal is to go through.
Okay,
it.
Neat. All right.
So, like I say, normally these things I would reveal, or, we would spoil it, but I definitely think it's worth the ride to go see it.
Okay.
Check it out.
Your description here actually made me want to check it out, so.
Yeah. And,
moving along?
Yeah, I'll just say this. It is, if you're a Liam Neeson fan, it's a Liam Neeson one-man show.
Is it taken on a plane?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I mean, he interacts with other characters, but I don't think that there's really an inch of film that he's not in.
Okay.
So, I mean, it is Liam Neeson's magnum opus.
Gotcha.
So, if you're a Liam Neeson fan, this is the movie for you. Moving on to number three, with $17 million this week, Need for Speed.
Need for Speed, Jesse Pinkman from Breaking Bad, Adrian Paul, right?
Yes. Yep.
Yep. Saw all the commercials for it. Remember when Breaking Bad ended? No desire to see. I don't like car movies. Not a big fan.
Okay. I'm normally not, but I love the Fast and the Furious movies. And the thing about this is that it is impossible. Impossible to watch this movie and not compare it to Fast and the Furious.
Well,
at
yeah,
every...
it's impossible to not... I've never seen Fast and the Furious, and even I saw the trailer and compared it to Fast and Furious.
Star is Aaron Paul. And
Aaron Paul, that's Aaron Paul. Adrian.
Yeah. The next biggest name is Michael Keaton, who has a small role in it. It's a fun movie. It does have some problems.
Okay.
It's a fairly long movie. It's 2 hours and 10 minutes.
Okay, awesome. That's a lot of car time.
Yeah. When they're not doing car stuff,
right?
There's not much going on,
right? So it's like you're really just there for the car scenes, and then everything
right.
else is filler.
And the thing, what you have to look at is the Fast and Furious movies and what made them work, is that people initially went in to see them for the cars because they're car porn.
Okay,
but you got invested into all these characters,
right?
Because the character development, the storytelling, everything is surprisingly good
okay.
in these films, especially the latter films, from the Fast and the Furious, and then I think it's like 4, 5, and 6 on.
Right.
You know, the storytelling and everything is very good. The Need for Speed, they try very hard to copy the formulas from Fast and Furious, where they make the villain, or not the villain, excuse me, the hero, like an ex-con.
Of course.
The other thing about Fast and Furious is that they're anti-heroes. The thing about the Fast and Furious cast with the main characters is that they're street racers, they rob banks.
Right.
They're criminals.
Okay.
There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. But you root for them.
It's a movie full of Han Solos.
Basically, yeah. I mean, you root for them in the movie, and...
So it's basically a non-space version of Firefly.
Yeah, I've never seen Firefly, so...
Yeah, it sounds like it works in this movie. It doesn't work in Firefly, in my opinion.
Okay. We're talking about Fast and Furious first.
Right.
And the thing also about it is that they are the best at everything that they do. And that makes where normally that makes characters unrelatable, it makes you root for them. They are smarter than the cops.
Right.
They are smarter than the people that they are robbing from. They drive better than the cops mm-hmm. and everybody else. And that's what makes it work. Need for Speed. And first of all, I'll put a disclaimer in. I am not a race car video game guy. I have no idea if the Need for Speed video games have any type of a storyline. I doubt it.
I don't know.
So if
there is, it's very loose, I'm sure.
Yeah. Basically, the storyline is that Aaron Paul's character, who we'll just call Aaron Paul because...
Pinkman.
What's that?
We'll call him Pinkman.
Yeah.
That was his name on Breaking Bad.
Oh, okay. He gets hired by some nondescript bad guy to repair this classic car.
Okay.
And him and his group repair it, and he sells it at an auction. And the deal is that him and his group will get 25% of what they sell the car for at mm-hmm. the auction. And which it's going to go for something like $3 million.
Okay.
They need the money to pay off their garage. You know, bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, thing to get this spot. They do it, and everything gets fine. And then him and nondescript bad guy get into an argument.
As they do.
And they agree to race, where he'll put his 25% up against the other guy's 75% of the money for it.
Okay.
really makes no sense why anybody would make a bet like this. One of the members of his of Aaron Paul's crew is a younger kid. It's one of those people that you don't know. Obviously, this actor is probably like 20, 21, but he probably looks like he's 16. So you don't know if he's supposed to be like 16 or if he's supposed to be 21.
Gotcha.
And they never go into it. So he talks himself into the race also. There's really no explanation as to what he's racing for or why he's in this race.
The love of the game.
I guess, because the race is, you know, the 25% versus the 75%. So the three of them race, and in the race, the villain nudges the kid's car. It flips off of a bridge, explodes.
Of course it does.
And he dies.
Now it's revenge.
Now it's a revenge plot. Thing about this is, they sink about the first 45 minutes of the movie in developing the kid's character. Because they want...
You want you to care about him when he goes.
Right. But they don't take the time to develop anybody else's character.
Okay.
In that time. Also, it's now a revenge movie where they just spent... It's taken 45 minutes to get the plot moving. For some reason that doesn't make sense, Aaron Paul goes to jail for literally a scene. Just so...
It's very easy to break out of jail in this film?
No, no. It's like he goes to jail because he gets blamed for the murder of the kid. Because they never find... They find... I'm sorry. I missed a very important part of the story here. They all race in the bad guy's Lamborghinis. He gives them each a Lamborghini to race in.
Okay. And will they find drugs in his?
No, no. The bad guy nudges the kid off the road. Aaron Paul stops to check on it. The bad guy drives away. The cop comes and is like, oh.
You killed this boy.
It's like, there's two cars here. And they were reported stolen. Ugh. And you two were illegal street racing.
Right.
So he goes to jail for 2 years, which takes place over the course of a scene.
Oh, really?
Yes.
We got a time jump. Okay.
Yeah. Literally for no other reason whatsoever, so that he can be an ex-con like the characters in Fast and the Furious.
Of course.
So he gets out of jail.
This happens late in the movie then.
Yeah. Well, we're like, again, we're like 45 minutes in before the plot starts actually rolling. So now he's out for revenge. And the best way to get revenge is to beat this guy in the world's biggest underground street race.
Of course. That is clearly the best revenge plot. This guy should join the League of Shadows with his awesome revenge plot.
Michael Keaton is a former racer who...
trains him? Please tell me he trains
No, he runs the underground race because he suffered an injury at some point and can no longer race.
Of course.
So
he's Patches O'Houlihan from Dodgeball.
Yes. Okay. So he sends out the invites to the race. And you get a whole bunch of them running for the cops to get across the country to the race.
Of course.
So, now, the details of the race are mind-bogglingly stupid to begin with. There's, I believe, either 6 or 8 cars that are in the race.
Mm-hmm.
And the the thing is that if you win the race, you get the slips for the other cars.
Okay.
You get control of all the cars. Right. You win the rights to all the cars.
Right.
And it's something like $3 or $4 million worth of cars.
All right, so you're putting your car up in this when you enter
yes.
the race.
Once you get the invite, you put your car up against the other cars.
Oh, that would suck.
The problem is, in the course of said race, every other car gets destroyed. Except for Aaron Paul's. Would he inevitably win?
So he wins his car and a whole bunch of scrap metal.
Yeah, pretty much.
Awesome.
Now, again, what makes this wrong versus what Fast and Furious does right is there's an awful lot of occurrences where Aaron Paul and his team are just straight up reckless, and you feel like they're going to kill innocent people.
Right. No human life. No accounting for human life.
Right. And in Fast and Furious, those characters are put in those situations, but you know, you never feel like that stuff's going to happen because you know how good these characters are at
right.
what they do.
This happens repeatedly, and they do it. They, like, shut down this main road Justin Bieber style so they could do their drag race.
Yeah.
But in the middle of the road, like, a school bus full of kids pops up. And, like, a car blows up right in front of the school bus full of kids and stuff like that. And it's just... It's very, very interesting. And, of course, at the very end, the villain is... His car flips over. And
right.
It's about to blow up. And Aaron Paul stops and pulls him out of the car to save his life.
See, I would much prefer him watching the guy burn.
Yeah.
Like, rather than just, like, I have to be the... This sounds very derivative.
Yeah, so he pulls him out so that, you know, he can spend the rest of his life in jail.
You know? Well, actually, I'm with him on that one. Because if I had a choice between dying in a fiery car explosion really quickly or going to jail, I'm choosing the car explosion.
Yeah.
Jail is not a fun place.
Because somehow, for reasons that are never really explained, Aaron Paul finds the Lamborghini that he was driving when the kid was killed, and somehow that's proof enough that he killed the kid and not him.
All right, whatever.
So, that is Need for Speed.
Okay.
Basically, my review for that is stay at home and rent one of the Fast and the Furiouses.
Gotcha.
On Netflix or Hulu.
What we got for number two?
Number two. All right. Now, one and two this week is a flip from one and two last week.
Okay.
All right. So, number two this week with $19 million this week is 300 Rise of the Empire.
Okay. Cool. Didn't see it, but want to.
Okay.
Did you see it?
I did see it.
Okay. And what'd you think?
I had actually never seen the original 300 until I went to see this. I watched the original 300 right before it. Ever see a movie or a sequel and been like, wow, this is just like the original?
Yeah. Home Alone 2.
Okay. Yeah. The perfect example.
It's the same thing, but in New York.
Yeah. This is quite literally the same thing.
Right.
It's the same movie just told from a different character's perspective.
Oh, it's the same battle?
Yes.
That's weird. I don't like that.
Yeah. It pretty much starts in the same exact place and ends in the same exact place. It's just told from a different character's POV.
Oh, okay.
And having known that, I really don't need to go into too much more detail because...
Yeah, let's move on to the number one because we're running low on time.
Okay. Real quick, I'll just say this about the 300 movie. Brought in 1900 this week. It's up
to 19 million.
1900. Cost $110 million to make, and is up to $236 million worldwide.
All right, good for them. They made their money. Zach, good for you, Zack Snyder.
Yeah.
Now get to work.
You think
there'll Batman vs Superman?
You think there'll be another one?
Probably.
I also think it would have done a lot better. And I think we went on to this before. If they didn't wait 8 years in between.
Yeah, it's entirely too much time has passed.
All right, and the number one movie this week, up from number two last week, is Mr. Peabody and Sherman.
I was wondering if this was the number one movie. Now, I know you didn't see this movie. I did.
Yeah, correct.
I was actually going to go see 300, and my wife wanted to go see Peabody and Sherman. I really like this movie. It's really fun. I mean, listen, don't look for Toy Story here. There's no big overarching message that's going to make you cry. This is Mr. Peabody and Sherman. It very much feels like a Peabody and Sherman cartoon from back in the day. Because I used to watch them at the end of Rocky and Bullwinkle and things like that. And I really enjoyed them. And there's enough little things in here that kind of make you appreciate the old cartoons. Like at the end, at the end of the cartoons, they used to always have the little like janitor guy coming in, like sweeping up the cartoon. They have that at the end of the movie. Which I thought was an interesting touch. And it's literally something that I had completely forgotten existed in the old cartoons until I saw it happen again in the movie. And I was like, right. There's less of, like, with Peabody and Sherman, there was always just kind of like, I'm Mr. Peabody. I'm a dog, and this is my boy. Like, you know, it's almost like Sherman was, like, the equivalent of a dog to him. In this one, it's much more that Peabody is and Sherman have a father-son relationship.
Right.
Yeah.
See that in the TV spots.
Yeah. They actually show him adopt Sherman and stuff like that. Whereas, it was just kind of a funny thing like, oh, look, a dog has a boy. That's hysterical.
Yeah.
Now it's like an actual father son relationship. I thought it was really interesting and it was heartwarming and it was funny. It was really funny.
they get the gentleman that plays he does so many. He was Kronk in Emperor's New Groove. He's Joe Swanson on Family Guy, and he was David Putty in Seinfeld.
Patrick Warburg,
yeah, and he's hysterical in it. He plays a ancient Greek soldier at the Battle of Troy in the Trojan Horse, and you know, it's just funny stuff like that. Really good feel good film. I suggest going to see it. It's definitely worth the. I would go see it in 2D. It's really not, you know, a lot of 3D-esque stuff in this film. So, you know, I would plop down the $12 for it, or go see Matinee like I did and pay $8.
How's Stephen Colbert in it?
He's not in it very much. Okay. Which actually, it's funny. My wife said that, and I agreed with her that when I heard Stephen Colbert was in this, I thought he was going to be Peabody.
Oh yeah.
And I feel like he would have been a good Peabody. But he plays. Sherman's the girl that like starts out as a bully but ends up being Sherman's love interest plays her father.
Okay.
And he's funny in it, don't get me wrong. And the character looks like Stephen Colbert, just without glasses.
Okay.
So, you know, you knew who he was the second he walked in, but he plays her father, and he starts off as being like all like ornery and stuff like that, and then Peabody gives him like a back adjustment, and all of a sudden he's happy. Like, because his like back gets thrown out, and Peabody like hits his back a certain way because he's a licensed chiropractor now too.
Was there a Rocky and Bullwinkle short before it?
No, there was a short about these little aliens that are trying to find a new home.
Okay,
and they come to like all these different planets, and they're like, "I claim this planet in the name of little alien people, whatever our names are." And like something comes out and like eats one of them, and they're like, "Back to the ship!" And it keeps happening over and over and over again.
Okay,
until the very end, they come to Earth. Mm-hmm. And that's when it ends. It's like they see Earth and it ends. So okay. I don't know if that's going to be continued in another film, or that'd be kind of cool if that was like a DreamWorks thing they keep putting in front of all of the. Listen, I'm not a big DreamWorks guy.
Yeah,
I enjoy Kung Fu Panda. Mm-hmm. I liked Despicable Me. At the end of the day, you know, Jack Black put it best. He goes, "Every year I do a DreamWorks movie and then make a lot of money because at the Oscars I bet on Disney."
Yeah, yeah. I know the There's been talks of a Rocky and Bullwinkle.
They already did a Rocky and Bullwinkle movie.
Yeah, but I'm like in this
style.
Oh,
a short.
No, in this style. And there had been rumors that they were going to attach like a short as like a test.
But nope.
Obviously, that's not the case.
Didn't happen. I don't think you need a Rocky and Bullwinkle movie at this point.
Yeah. This is kind of mind-boggling to me looking at this. First of all, it did $21 million this week. What's interesting about this is, this opened over a month ago in Europe.
Yeah.
It opened a long time ago in Europe. So with that in mind, it's up to $148 million worldwide.
All right.
Which is interesting. This cost, the production cost on this was $145 million.
So it just made its money back.
Yeah, it just made its money back. $145 million.
It's a DreamWorks movie.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, I don't understand where all that money went. I mean, listen, and CGI animated films are not cheap.
No, not at all.
And I think, you know, Shrek and Despicable Me have done gangbusters numbers, but yeah. I would say Peabody and Sherman's pretty standard fare for DreamWorks.
Yeah.
You know, that's just my opinion.
I think
opinion.
That's it. Hopefully it's good. I mean, they broke even, so that's good.
DreamWorks has a lot of movies where I'm like, okay, that was a fun movie.
Yeah.
They're much more willing to go the sequel route.
Then, oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I'm sure there'll be a Peabody and Sherman, too, as long as this makes its money. And it will within the next. Yeah.
Well, I think that, I mean, if their plan is to expand on the Rocky and Bullwinkle, you know, universe,
yeah,
using all the characters from there.
Yeah, because then you can get a Dudley Do-Right movie. I mean, these are things that have already been made into movies a long time ago, though. Like, but then again, we do live in the era of the reboot.
Yeah, and Bullwinkle, they made those, they made them as live action.
Yeah, that Bullwinkle and that Rocky and Bullwinkle movie was a little weird because it was like, you know, live action people with a CGI moose and squirrel.
Yeah. But yeah, that's the top 10.
Great, and we're at an hour 3, so.
Okay, that sounds about right. So we're going to start wrapping things up. Next week, we are going to have a special episode. We're going to actually tackle the small screen, not silver screen spoilers. We're going to be talking about some of our favorite geek-style television shows.
Yes, it's never been a better time to be a geek and a TV fan, folks.
That's right. So, be sure to visit us online. What's the...
SilverScreenSpoilers.podomatic.com, or just type in Silver Screen Spoilers to... you know, into iTunes, and we'll come right up.
That's right. And, you know, be sure to visit us on Twitter at SS Spoilers and send us an email at silverscreenspoilers@gmail.com.
Yep. And if you like the show, folks, please rate, review it in iTunes and tell a friend about it. Get it out there, share it around.
Yep. And be sure to check out all the other shows on the White Dragon Podcast Network. That's a little commercial.
Yeah, I need to make a new one, so it's probably not going to be one attached to this, but...
Okay, well, on Podomatic, that has a link to all the other
Absolutely,
shows.
Yeah. And even if you search WDPN on iTunes, all our stuff pops up. We have 9 shows currently.
Awesome, 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 awesome. So, all right, folks, until next week, for Kevin Kessler, I'm Dave Swan, and we will see you at the theater.
This has been a production of the White Dragon Podcast Network. For information on this, as well as our other great podcasts, check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/WD Podcast Network, email us at WDPodcastNetwork@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter at White Dragon PN.